Well, Happy New Year, everyone. We are recording right before the ball drops and we're kicking off 2026. So with that, Charlie, Happy New Year. And do you have any New Year's resolutions already constructed for 2026?
Oh my goodness. And hello. It's so nice to see you, Josh. It's going to be a great year. 2026 is going to be awesome. The resolution I have is be in one lane and follow it all the way through. Not get distracted, right? I think we got to do that. One lane and stick it out. What about you?
Well, to be honest and transparent to everyone, we've literally been talking like an hour before pushing record. So I think our plan, you know, moving forward for 2026, I think, yeah, it's just exciting. I think we're going to talk a little bit at the end about some of the cohorts that we've got constructed and are going to be launching here in 2026. But then also, like, we get to speak together and we have some resources coming out to enhance the language of behavior. And yeah, I'm just super excited about just what has been done this past year as we're reflecting, but then also what we're going to be building on and those stepping stones for 2026. So I'm just so excited to be working with you continuously, Charlie, for the new year, and just excited about, you know, all the different projects that we've got going on together.
You as well, of course. I'm excited. And I really want to support you and your work, because anybody who's listening, if you're truly wanting to get into leadership, you got to go see Josh. You got to do that Aspire to Lead cohort, that book, pull them in for a keynote to get your staff excited to become leaders. So yeah, it's good stuff.
You're kind. I know you're excited because you're moving into kind of a different practice for the new year. For those who haven't heard, will you just share a little bit about that, Charlie?
Well, yeah. And it's funny. Thanks for mentioning that, because it's part of the whole big plan. It always has been. It's about very targeted, specialized treatment for that elevated nervous system. So now I get to do that in private practice through telehealth. I'm excited to work with an individual who feels constantly dysregulated or stuck or in a loop. And so if I can provide relief, it's still that whole like transformation from the system is going to start with, from the inside out. And that starts with that person. So when we equip that person individually, then it will radiate out into the system. So I am so excited about that. If people are in Kentucky, I provide there, and I'm going to be licensed in other states as well. Just working on that.
So exciting. All right. Well, that's actually pretty close to the question that I saw on the form. So I'm going to pull that up real quick and put it on a banner here. So I'm going to pull up the question here. How do I know if behavior is trauma or just manipulation? And I know we get this a lot from teachers, Charlie. This question is asked by many, many folks because it's hard. I think as we see behavior, sometimes we go to the negative, we assume, and it turns into, I think this kid is just trying to manipulate the situation versus maybe there's something behind it. So when you see this question, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
First thing that comes to mind is manipulation is a skill and trauma is a survival strategy. And so if somebody's becoming manipulative, well, they've thought about it, and it requires like intention, planning, knowing what that impact might be, because that is the control they need behind it. And trauma is a response that's reflexive. It's fast. It's not something they're trying to negotiate, just so it's a nervous system response. It's not really strategy after all. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to throw another question at you, because as you're talking, I was thinking through this. Could the fact that a student has gone through a traumatic event cause them to create skills to be manipulative as a defense mechanism?
Yeah, actually, that's how like sociopathy emerges, narcissism emerges. It's about adaptation. So some people become adaptive in a very strong, healthy way, and some people become maladaptive. And that's when they get into drugs and alcohol, and there's manipulation there. They're trying to get that next fix. And I will say it still goes back to the nervous system. It's still like, I need to fulfill that urge. And so if we're not cognizant of that and aware of that, it gets out of hand, then they'll absolutely can be manipulative to serve that need. It can be. So that's why it's so hard too, because like I always say, trauma doesn't give you the excuse for behavior though. It still doesn't. So when people are listening to me talk about trauma, it's to understand it, but it's not to excuse it. So like we can have compassion for people and what happened, but there is a certain point where we just have to hold them accountable. And that's where boundaries come into play. And that's hard when you love somebody. That's when it's really tough. So, okay. Now saying all that, what are your thoughts? I know you've got some.
I really think that what we were talking about with the manipulation component is that I think it's frustrating for folks. And then when they hear trauma, I think sometimes it's to what you're talking about is, oh, it's an excuse. And then because maybe that student has gone through that, we then can't provide consequences. And anyone's read our book, you understand that that's not the case, right? We're not talking about sitting in a circle, holding hands, singing Kumbaya. Like, that's not what we're doing here. We do need to understand what's behind the behavior and understanding what the cause is that's related to it. Instead of it just being a bad child or, you know, a child that doesn't want to be in that space, there might be something bigger going on. And I've seen it firsthand. I do think students that have gone through a really tough childhood and have gone through either chronic stress or trauma build skills to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And it does look like manipulation because they are trying to get themselves to be in control of whatever's going on. And so I think there's just a marriage there that does exist. And I don't know, I'm having a really tough time as I'm thinking through this of having as like one container over here of trauma and one container over here of manipulation. For me, I'm seeing, like in my experience with students, that a lot of times those are bridged.
Yeah, they can be. And that's why it's so difficult too. It's hard to have compassion for people that we don't like, or when we don't like their behavior, or we feel mistreated or are mistreated. And so that, again, that's why strong boundaries come into play. So let's talk about this. So let's think about that dysregulation. So this is where attachment comes in. When we talk trauma, we talk attachment. So usually when people show up with behaviors, you can link it back to childhood somehow. A lot of us adults are carrying things into adulthood, way into adulthood. Like we shouldn't be doing this, right? But if you don't have an awareness, you don't know. And our generation, we didn't learn about this. So now we have an awareness. But if we're bringing it in there and these behaviors are relationally inappropriate or toxic, I guess is a word we could use, then you could go back to childhood and be like, there was a caregiver who I needed something from them at that time in my life and they didn't give it to me. It doesn't mean they're bad parents. That happens with great parents, but you can often link that back to a single time of their life, oftentimes. So that's an attachment lens. And what happens is these kids grow up and into adulthood. And if you see them being like dependent on other people too much, or that one person that looks like a caregiver, then they start relying on them to regulate. And then guess what happens? Then they go into their relationships and they expect that other person to regulate them. And that's when that whole thing about like, you cannot regulate somebody else's nervous system for them. And if you do, that is really tough in a relation. You can't do that in a relationship in a healthy way. And so the key here is, I'm saying this because this is a strategy. The co-regulation is helpful. The problem is if that other person then becomes codependent on you for their own regulation of their nervous system, of that trauma, that response, that is not a healthy relationship. And so if we have to be in check with that, that's where boundaries really come into play. So the treatment, the best treatment we can do, because we all want to know, well, what do we do about this? The best thing that we can do is be very stable and predictable, be very consistently, boringly consistent and predictable, and not engage in the drama and not engage when it's intense. And those boundaries have to stick. So that starts with us. When we are dysregulated, and you and I talk about this all the time, Josh, this is why it's so key. When we're dysregulated, it is not helpful to that other person at all. So it doesn't protect us either. So there's so much more to this, as you can tell. But the key is we cannot regulate other people's nervous systems. We have to rely on ourselves. So people who are jealous, people who are feeling like they're going to be abandoned, people who are highly anxious, if they're relying on other people to regulate them, we need to teach them the skill so that they don't become manipulative. Otherwise, they are going to try to control you if you're the person that helps them regulate, because that is easier. It's easier rather than feeling the shame and the pain and all of that. It's an avoidance tactic.
Yep.
So there, again, there's a lot there and I have all these things running through my mind.
Yeah. And I'm thinking too, I think, and I've done this with students, is to teach them, what is the emotion that you're feeling? Negative emotion. What is causing the behavior? Talking about the regulation component. But then also a lot of times it comes down to, you know, they do feel out of control. They feel anxiety about what may occur in the future. The loss of maybe a relationship, fill in the blank, getting to the bottom of that, but then also teach them the skills of, okay, what's the positive thing that you can do to enhance the situation versus what you're doing, and actually calling it out and saying, this is manipulative, You know, is this how you want this relationship to be? And to put the action that the student is doing, showing them how it's a negative and it is a form of manipulation to the relationship, which is going to break it down, which is not what the student wants. And then showing them kind of that pathway moving forward. So that having that teach piece, I think so many times it's just like, well, punish, make them understand that they shouldn't do this. But it really that's out of fear of the punishment that's coming versus teaching them about it's actually destructive. It's destructive mm-hmm. behavior to the person that you're working with or trying to be around. So I think that strategy is better as far as sitting down and actually having a conversation and working through that, because typically a young adolescent mind, they don't understand all those components. So you need to walk them through that to help them so that later in life, when they are an adult, they know how to have a healthy relationship versus what they're trying to construct, which is a manipulative situation.
Yes. And you're right. That conversation is important when they're not dysregulated, which I know you do that practice all the time. When they're not dysregulated, otherwise they're not hearing you. So our listeners need to know that when we are teaching kids about how their brain is working, their nervous system this way, that's got to be when they can access that prefrontal cortex, that thinking part of the brain. Otherwise they're not hearing you. They're not going to listen, but they do want to do well. They do want to be okay. They don't typically want to be disruptive. So when they are disruptive, it means they're not considering the outcome. They're not thinking about anybody else. They're in protection mode, as we've said a million times. Even when it appears to be manipulative, it's still about, I'm trying to get through something that's really uncomfortable. So what we're not teaching is how to sit with the discomfort. And here's why. And that's why, Josh, you were saying, name the feeling, because the negative feeling, we need to learn about what that is. And not even the why behind it all the time, just what is it? And it hurts or it's uncomfortable. I don't like it. And that's when we have to have that exposure to it in a safe space, because that way your nervous system gets used to it and that you're going to be okay afterwards. But here's the key. There's a difference between the guilt and the shame that's coming in as a result that's keeping people and adults too and kids avoiding or reacting. And oftentimes it's avoidance. Shame is avoidance. So here's the difference between guilt and shame here, because shame is coming through trauma. Guilt is, I did something wrong. And that's when the repair is much easier. I did something wrong. I know I did. I lied so that I could get that candy. I lied so that I could extend my curfew. So I wasn't actually out at this friend's at 11. I was here, but I wanted to stay till 12. So I'm going to lie to you about where I am. So that's manipulative for sure. With trauma, it's not about I did something wrong. It's I am bad. Not I did something bad. I am bad at my core. And so that's what Brené Brown talks about, shame. To go back into that, to acknowledge that, that means your ego has to be completely online and on board to say, oh yeah, I am actually not an angel, believe it or not. I actually am not a perfect human. And so some of that can be really deep and dark about admitting that fault of your character. And a lot of us can't do that easily. So we go back into shame. So that's really, really tough. But that's where therapy can be very helpful for people who get stuck in that loop. If there's a pattern, that's where therapy can be helpful. Yeah. What were you going to say? I know you have some good thoughts about this too.
I am just in agreement. I think all of those things, I was just thinking there's so many tentacles from this, both from the teacher perspective of the things that we're dealing with and things that have happened in our past and how we react to that. Because, you know, for instance, if you have family members that were manipulative to you growing up, you're obviously going to be triggered by some of those behaviors that your students are exhibiting that bring up maybe something that happened with siblings or something that happened with parents or another adult figure. And you just can't handle that. And you don't know why this behavior is amplifying your emotions to such a high degree as the adult. And so then, you know, you're talking about that co-regulation. Well, if I'm dysregulated, well, obviously I'm only going to enhance that situation with the kid. So I think there's just so many pieces to that. And as someone who has gone through therapy consistently over years of identifying some of that stuff, and even with my own children at home, some of the things that they do triggers me and I don't understand why. Well, you know, I have a professional to help me dissect that to figure out, okay, maybe that's something else that I haven't worked through yet. It's only going to help me better as an educator, but then also as a parent moving forward. So I think what you're saying is great. And I think there's a lot more that can be said about this topic and specifically to trauma and manipulation.
Absolutely. And if we're looking at it like this, like trauma shows up inconsistently. So there's a trigger, right? That trigger, you've heard that word a million times. There's something in the environment that kind of switches on the switch, like, oh, something's not right. And that really is a physiological process in your brain, and your nervous system does shoot up. That's why we all have different responses. One kid might look really pale. One kid might need to get up and go to the bathroom. Another kid might start shaking. Lots of different things. Okay. Some might get red. It really is like inconsistently something gets triggered. It might be a thought they have in their head, a realization that, and this is true with people who have a lot of anxiety, that I'm going to be going in the hallway next and that kid's going to be in there and they're going to bother me again, or I have to go home. That was me when I was in an abusive marriage. When I had to leave school, I noticed my last class of the day ended. And that triggered me because I'm like, oh gosh, no, now I have to go back to reality. I have to go back to my home life. So that to me, I would notice the changes there. So it's different for everybody, but manipulation shows up as patterns. It's predictable. There's a clear payoff and there's repetition there. So that's just one other piece to that puzzle.
All right. Well, that was a heavy conversation. Let's go a little lighthearted as we go into the new year. Let's do a little behind the banter. All right. So since we're talking about regulation, Shirley, I think this is a perfect question in relation to that. So what is a completely ordinary moment in your day that you secretly look forward to?
Ooh, I love around 7 o'clock because that is the time when we're finished with dinner. I can go for a nice walk with my family or on my own if I need it. I can cuddle up on the couch with my family or on my own. It's one of those key times. It's not quite time to go to bed. It's a quiet time in my family. I like that. What about you?
I have one in the morning, one in the evening. Morning coffee is well, you've seen me in the morning. I don't function very well.
So, you pull it off so well, though. You do.
Before a conference, both of us have to, go get our coffee, but I desperately need it. And then in the evening, I'm the same as you. You know, once I get the kids to bed, I like to go for an evening walk with my dog, as I usually box you with various things going on in my brain, because that's time where, it's quiet. I absolutely love it in the wintertime when the snow is like real slow. Those are my favorite times. And then, usually I'm either listening to some calm music or a podcast that I enjoy. You know, it's just like time by myself without my 6 crazy kids. So, it's like just a really nice time to unwind and unpack the day in my brain.
Love that. That's great.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about some fun things coming up in 2026. So we had mentioned at the beginning, Charlie, but I want to come back to it. You have a cohort model that you're launching here. So will you share a little bit about what you're constructing?
Yeah. And it's based on some of the work that we've done together and individually. And so people keep asking me about the same kind of thing. And it's about how do I help you manage stress and regulate that nervous system, even when you're under pressure of life? How do you get back to your life when you're kind of struggling and in that high pressured role? So the cohort is really for organizations, and a lot of organizations we work with are in education, but also youth organizations. So it's kind of like start of the school year is when I have 2 launch periods. So I have August, and then I also have an accelerated version in January. So the 10 month is the August, that's throughout a school year, and it emulates what organizations do with youth and if they're leading youth or students or each other. And then the other one is January, where it's accelerated, it's twice a month. So I am really excited about that. People have been asking me about it for a long time. I finally have a path to make it work. So I'm excited. Okay, what about you, Josh? I know you've got your cohort. Tell everyone about that.
Well, before we talk about that, so if they go to your website, is that where they're going to find the information in regards to the cohort?
Yeah, you know what? If you just go to thrivingeducator.org, go click on the Rapid Resets. It's a free resource that everybody loves. It's totally free. Get in there and you'll get emails about it. Yeah, people need to go there, check it out. But start there. Start at the Rapid Resets, thrivingeducator.org. Rapid Resets, top corner button, click there, and then you'll learn all about it. But I want you to get the resource first, because it is about regulation and just tips and strategies that are usable, like today.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, okay. So I feel like I've talked about this possibly before, but if you head over to joshstamber.com/leadership-cohorts, we've done now 2 months going into our third month of the Aspire Lead cohort. And so it's for aspiring leaders. So it doesn't matter your title. If you're looking to enhance your leadership journey and get into that next role, we have a beautiful community that's being constructed of some really passionate and fantastic people. And yeah, this is something that, Charlie, you know, I've been passionate about for many, many years. The whole reason I built my first podcast, Aspire to Lead, and wrote my book, my first book, was because of the work that I was doing in my own district at the time. And to be able to literally coach and help them, yeah, it's brought that all those good feelings. I love it so much and super excited. I got more folks that have reached out. So we're going to launch again a second cohort, and we have monthly meetings on Zoom where we bring everybody together for just an hour session here and there. We do that twice a month. And yeah, I got some more folks again, all over the country that are going to be jumping into the second cohort. So if you're interested, something that you want to learn more about, of course, that's the website. And we'll have all of our links in the show notes for folks. But I'm super excited for 2026 and what's going to happen between the two cohorts that we've got constructed and how that's going to help folks. Because we're already seeing the effects, Charlie, from the districts we're working with, the educators we're working with. Yeah, I'm super excited.
Me too. There's so much. And people are informing us about what they want. So it's good.
That's the thing about the cohort model is like we get to build it as we go, you know, as we're seeing the needs and what people are wanting. I mean, that's super fun for me. I know it's super fun for you. So enough about the cohorts. We had a fantastic question for this episode, but we want to make sure that we are, of course, addressing things that are happening on your campus, in your classrooms, within your district. And so continuously feed us with questions in that form. We're going to have the bit.ly in the show notes for everyone. So it's bit.ly/LOB questions, and our links will be in the show notes also. So if you want to reach out, if you need anything, if you need a keynote speaker, if you need to get more information about the cohorts, if you want to sign up for some of the free resources and newsletters that we have on our websites, we'd love that. And then of course, we'd love for you to share about the podcast, right? So our numbers, Charlie, keep going up each month, which is super exciting, but that's not because of us. It's because of the listeners finding the content valuable and they're sharing it with colleagues, family members, friends. So we just appreciate you all. So please continuously do that. And yeah, super excited for 2026. And again, Happy New Year, everyone.
Awesome.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and a podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. We'll see you on the next episode.